welcome to a brand new episode of Guitar Talk. I'm your host, Jimmy Warren. Thank you so much for tuning in. We've got a great show in store for you. We really do. Now, you know, over the past handful of seasons, because we're about to go into season five starting on January, and I have had so many requests for somebody from King's X to be on Guitar Talk. That's right. I mean, there's been a lot of requests. A lot of people have asked for Ty or Doug, or, you know, to be on the show. Well, tonight your dreams come true, because Doug Pinnick is joining us here in just a moment right here on Guitar Talk. We sat down, we had a great conversation that I know that you're going to enjoy, because we go into the world of King's X, we go into the world of Doug Pinnick, we talk about music in general. It is just a great conversation again. So do yourself a favor, sit down, put your feet up, get a nice cool beverage, and enjoy this conversation with the one and only Doug Pinnick from King's X. What's going on, Doug?
Hey, there you are. Hello, good morning.
How you doing?
I ain't got no complaints.
Yeah?
None.
You want to hear something crazy? I know you and I have never met, right? I've seen you play a million times. Love the band, of course.
Thank you.
You are one of the top 10 most requested people to come on my
show.
You're fucking right, man. Yeah.
Really? That makes my day. That makes my day, man. Fuck. Jeez.
Everybody loves you.
That blows my mind. Well, good. Awesome.
Yeah. And I got to ask a question. I'm almost 100% positive it was you. And correct me if I'm wrong, but was it you with Satriani during the Experiencing Hendrix tour?
Yeah, I sang and played bass.
I thought that was you. Man, I saw it at the Chicago Theater.
Oh, you were there. Cool.
Oh, hell yeah, man. It was so good.
My mom and family came, so I remember that night real well.
Oh, really? Are they from Chicago?
Yeah.
Ah, well, very cool. Very cool. You're on the East Coast though now, aren't you? Are you guys?
Yeah,
I'm
in LA. I am.
Oh, you're in LA.
Yeah.
Okay. Are the rest of the guys, or is Jerry in the East Coast?
Yeah, Jerry's in New Jersey. Ty's in Kansas City. I can't believe I couldn't remember the name. Yeah.
Wow. Well, cool, man. I'm glad you're here. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
A lot of my friends are just massive King's X fans. I haven't come across anybody that doesn't love the band. So
good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it keeps you working. So tell me, you've got this project called Naked.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about it? What can
I put that record about 12, 13 years ago now, something like that. Originally, I had just moved to Los Angeles, and I decided that it was right around 2000, late 2010, I guess, around when like everybody was broke, nobody had a job, everybody's losing their houses, and everybody's freaking out. And I'm like sitting there going, okay, I'm in the same boat as everybody else. What should I do? Should I stay here in Texas and struggle to keep this house up, or should I just take off to California with a guitar and some clothes and live the dream that I've been living my whole life anyway? Might as well just start at ground zero again and do it over again. So I did. I sold my house and I moved out to California and rented a room in with my guitar and Pro Tools and I just figured I'm just going to just do it like I did it when I was in my 20s, just start over again. Just because I needed that, actually, just needed to get there, because, you know, I was getting close to 60 at that time, and I was just trying to, I don't know, I just wanted I needed a kick in the ass. I felt like I got lazy. So I purposely did that. And as I was out there, I went through a lot, you know, dealing with everything, just like everybody else is going through. But I wrote this record in my bedroom. With my Pro Tools and my drum machine. And, I just put it out like it was, you know, no label, no nothing, just threw it out there. I don't know how many people heard it even, but it was sort of lethargic, is that the word for it? I just kind of poured my soul out for the last 10 years on that record. And as a result of it, I put it out, and you know, people have been buying it. It's on my website, so you know, I'll sell two or three a month. I'll sign it for them. And Joe at Rat Pack, I said to him, I told him, I said, you know, I didn't put this record on a label or anything. So let's put it out on vinyl. So I'll remix it and remaster it, and we'll get it remastered. So I pulled out all the tracks and remixed it. I put Phil Collins' drum set on it, which sounds so much better. And literally. And I mixed it for vinyls. It's not as compressed. It's not all brick walled, but it's got depth and it's got this that vinyl quality in the sound. And so we made up a couple thousand of them, I think, or maybe more, but it's limited. And we're gonna put it out. It's coming out like soon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I tell you what, man. It's when you hear what you just said. People, when they look at somebody like yourself, when they look at you as the musician you are, the band that you're in, and the things that you've done, people would, they don't think of how hard it is to be a working musician. Doesn't matter what friggin' level you're at, there is always trials and hard times.
I think people just forget that just because we're living the life that we wanted to live and we're happy about it, doesn't mean we're having a good time 24 hours a day. Our lives don't change. No one's lives really change. You just give your life to what you're doing and you go do it. If you're building a house, if you're digging a ditch, whatever you do, if that's what you love to do, then you should be doing it, because that's what we're making you happy, you know? And, it doesn't matter the outcome, as long as you're doing what you love to do. A friend of mine told me a couple of days ago, he heard this guy told him, he says, you know, if you're going to die, die for something that you love, you know, and that made a lot of sense. If you're going to work your ass off and break your neck and suffer and struggle and live your life that way without any purpose, you know, that's a sad thing. But if you got a reason to do it, then that's a whole different reason, different way to look at it, the way I see it. And at this point in my life, I got so many years to look back on. I'm kind of overwhelmed at all the life that I've had that I didn't notice. You know, you don't pay attention to everything that you've done. You're just too busy looking to the future or now, you know. And I'm always ahead of myself thinking, what am I going to do tomorrow and the day after? And when I got around 70, 72, well, I'm 73 now, and I look back and I just go, wow. And I pull out all these old records and all these old demos and these bands that I was in my 20s and stuff like that. And I smile. You know, and I go, dude, you've been doing this your whole life, and this is who you are. And I kind of took a big grin and went, you know, you did it, you know, and you're still doing it. And it's exciting now because I've done it for so long, and that's the excitement of it. I've been able to do it and to make a living at it for some reason.
Yeah, you know, most people think that, you know, just because, you know, you play in a band that's known, or just because you're on a label and you're touring and stuff like that, that, you know, everything is just, it's just all glamorous. And it's, you know what I mean? It's like you, right? They only see the stage and the lights and the excitement at the moment.
And you know, the thing is, they don't understand that it's not excitement for us. It's exciting to them. Yeah. You know, when I'm on stage, you know, people will come up and say, oh, man, you're in the moment. You can tell you were just enjoying what you're doing, what you love, you know. And I'm thinking, no, I'm on stage thinking about hitting that note. Should I hit this note or that note? Am I in time with Jerry? I'm behind the beat. Oh, I'm tuning a little off. I got to fix it as soon as the song's over. You know, I'm sitting there going, I can't hear the snare well enough. Fuck, I hope I can keep up, you know. And you know, I mean, that's what we're going through on stage. But it's when you're doing it, it's like basketball or football or whatever. You're just in the moment, and you're in on the, and you're you're like on this team and you're all got one mind and one accord and you're just moving along no matter what, you know, and one holding the other up and the other's falling down and the other's pulling them up and you're going back and forth and you're just, and it's fun, you know, and but you don't stop and go, oh, this is fun when you're doing it. When you get done with it, you go, okay, we got through that one. Now we got to do tomorrow. You know, and to let the people love it, you know, because it's for them, you know. I mean, I wouldn't get on stage if there was nobody out there, you know. Why would I play for nobody? You know, I can do that at home when I've been doing it all my life, you know. So when we go out and play for people, that's the joy of it, to see that response, to see that smile. You know, I look out in the audience and that glow in people's eyes and that grin, and especially when we start a song. And we might have done that song every show for the last 30 years, and they still, somebody jumps and somebody goes, yeah, you know, they're waiting for that moment, you know. And those are the things that I love, is watching the crowd react to whatever it is that we've done to them.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it really is amazing. And that, so, I mean, let's go back and let's talk about a little of you being, you know, a bass player and a musician. And that, I mean, I don't want to know your influences and stuff like that, but I'm really curious as to what are some of the things you did, man, that make you as badass as you are right now.
Well, thank you for calling me badass. I appreciate that. I've been playing bass for over 50 years, so I kind of got an idea of what I'm doing, and I got an idea of how I sound now. And all I've ever wanted to do was sound like a cross between Jamie Jamerson and Motown, and Chris Squire from Yes. Those are the two guys that I channeled. And Dusty Hill, when it comes to, well, how do I put it? Keeping it simple, stupid. You know what I'm saying? It's like, come on, man, Dusty can play just doom, boom, boom, boom. And it's like, yeah, that's it, you know. And you know, Jamie Jamerson just had the melodies, you know. Do-do-do-do-do-boom-do-do. He just had the riffs that carried the song. And Chris Squire did too. But Chris Squire's riffs carried the song, but it was amazing how it could carry the weight of all that was going on around him. And yes, which really stood out, were how he could find a groove in the chaos, in the beauty of what they were doing. I mean, I'm li listening to like Close the Edge, and it's like that song 20 minutes long, and I can sit there and listen to the whole thing and just put my jaw on the ground and just listen to the bass and what he did on it. And the other thing about bass for me is, you know, there are bass players, and then there's people who play bass, and not cutting anyone down to say that, oh, you just play bass, but there's two different ways to play it. There's an accurate way, the perfect way, the studio way, the way that I wish I could play, you know. But I'm sort of a sloppy bass player who likes to put a melody underneath everybody and try to make you dance to it. You know, because when I grew up, I loved to dance. Everything I did, I danced. I was going to be a professional dancer until I started singing in a band, and then that stopped. But the groove, can you dance to it? Can you do it? You know, can you? Back in the day, it was, you know, the boogaloo and the dog and all that stuff. So back in the 60s, you know, we were doing all those moves. So when I write a song, it's got to have that vibe to it, you know, where you got you it's got a groove. And so no matter what I'm playing, I kind of tend to try to put a groove in there somewhere, no matter what the genre is. I might swing it a little too much and I have to reel it back in because it'll turn into something else. But Yeah, I just like to slap that little bit of that little twist on it. The other thing also is my music teacher in college. I took one college semester, and it was music theory. And the teacher said the first day when he came in, he says, "If there's anything that you learn in music, if you don't learn anything from this class, what I'm trying to say is, always remember this one thing, that all rules in music are made to be broken." And nobody ever said that to me before, because I grew up in grade school and, I had music teachers there. I was singing in choir and we were doing show tunes, and they'd get me behind the piano and I'd sing Blue Moon and, all these Bing Crosby songs and Frank Sinatra, this whole 50s stuff and the movies and stuff. And so I did that, and I did gospel music, and I sang, and I tried to mimic that and learn it. But I didn't know that I could mix them two together. I didn't know that I could take Led Zeppelin and put Sly and the Family Stone together with it, And when I started doing that, I started just making my forging my own way of my Picasso, I Salvador Dali, some fucked up art, because my songs are a bit screwed up in many ways. I like to write songs that there's a picnic and a train wreck going through it. I mean, nowadays a lot of people are doing that. Not to say, I'm not saying they copied us, but back in the day, I just really liked to fuck things up, yes, because they could do that and still put a melody over top of it. And it became a dying thing, for a while, until, and I just wanted to keep pushing that. Let's see what kind of melody you can come up with over top of a really, really fucked up rhythm underneath it. I mean, like Meshuggah. Oh man, I'd love to sing a song from Meshuggah, just one, and put like a gospel choir type vibe over top of it, and get a gospel choir singing it. I mean, that would be just so cool. But yeah, that's what I love about music is if you can take different genres and put them together and make sense of something and make a song out of it. That's what I'm always interested in, because there's nothing else. I mean, everybody's made up every riff that there is. We've made up every groove that there is. We've made up every time signature that there is, many, many times over. I mean, especially in rock and roll, we've repeated ourselves, what, how many times now? I mean, like, at least rock and roll has been reinvented five times since it was started, like what, 1950? And so this, oh, seven times, yeah. And every time we go back to ground zero and the same riffs pop back up again. So it's all about how can you manipulate the metaphysical and make a song that moves people with different genres and different vibes and different twists and turns and keep their attention to those who are interested.
Yeah. A lot of times a musician or a band is creating, their first album. Let's say this is before your first album. You spend a lifetime developing and creating that first album, right? Writing it and thinking it through, and maybe even going into the second. But after you get down the road a bit, how do you stay fresh? How do you keep it new? You know what I mean? Because then all of a sudden you got pressure, let's say, sometimes from the record label. Here's some money. Here's a week in the studio. Hurry up and make an album. We got to get back out on the road. And so how do you stay really creative in that? Because you come across to me talking to you now as somebody that just is super creative, right? Because you're no, serious, because you're, the way that you're talking about taking all these elements and rethinking them and crushing them together and stuff like that. I mean, that's very creative. A lot of people don't think of that. They got a formula, right? I got two verses, I got a chorus, I got a bridge, bam, I'm back in, and here we go, right? You don't sound like you think like that.
No, I don't anymore. It came from boredom. It's like we start out, we write simple songs, and we get more complicated, and we try different styles, and we go around in circles with what we like and listen to. And then after a while, you start to understand what you're doing, And then you have to understand how to put chords together and put parts together and what you should do and maybe what you shouldn't do, you know, and what is boring and what isn't, because you've done it so many times and you see the response, you know. We learn from people's response to what we do also. And you don't want to repeat yourself, but you still want to capture whatever it is that you created before that you don't know what you captured, you know. So it's sort of like in early days, it started out really, really simple. You know, I mean, I'm listening to Little Richard when I'm 6 and 7 years old, so all I knew was three chords, and that was it, you know. But then you know, I remember hearing Bo Diddley, and all of a sudden there's this new rhythm. I'm going, oh, that's interesting. You know, and through listening to music, everybody kept bringing these new things to the table. And the Staple Singers popped up, and Pop Staples had this really funky way of playing guitar with a tremolo in the Strat, and Mavis could just sing her heart out, and then her sisters and brothers just could just match her in their harmonies. And I'm like, you know, I'm not even 10 yet, and this stuff is moving me. And I'm listening to all this stuff and Ray Charles and things like that. But then what started happening was when I was 14, I heard Sly and the Family Stone, I Want to Take It Higher. And that was the first time I was old enough to see a change in music. And all of a sudden, I heard the Staple Singers, but I heard the Beatles mixed in that with it. And I heard this new kind of funk. But it was still reminding me of the Staple Singers, and I'm going, wow. And I started listening to Sly, and I learned, you know, as I went through Sly's, through the history of Sly. I mean, if you put the two genres together, they just continued. It just seemed to be they were the new Staple Singers. So from that point, I started realizing that you can take parts from other things and put them together. And so I remember when I wrote Born to Be Loved, I can shout from the rooftop how I really feel. That's the Andrews Sisters. He was a boogie woogie boogie for Company B. And I did that on purpose, you know. It was like, that's what that needed, that staccato three-part harmony. And so it's not that I'm creative as much as I listened to a lot of music growing up and a lot of different genres of music. Just kind of because I just like different types of music. And as a result of it, I'm kind of confused as to what I would fall into as what I love, because there's so many different aspects of what I love, which makes what I write, the music that I write, what it is. Which most people can't relate to because it's too much going on there. But that's what's going on in my head. It's like I'm trying to impress myself and going, how can you fuck this up and twist it and make it different? And I remember hearing talking about my revolution. Dun, 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 and then all of a sudden he goes up a half step. And I think he went up three steps and there was no chorus, really. And I thought, now that's interesting, because you don't do a key, a half step up in rock and roll. Nobody does that. They do that in show tunes because it lifts and it does this and that. And I'm thinking, wow, he did that in a rock song, you know? And so I'm sitting there listening, going, or, Revolution by the Beatles, you know, first song ever that had a distorted guitar all the way through it. You can do that, you know. So, and that's the thing, is all rules are made to be broken. So I just decided to just go, let's see how we can break some more rules. And I've had some miserable failed attempts, you know. I've tried some crazy ass stuff that just like that ain't working, Doug. You know, you just kind of went off the deep end there. Nobody gets that one. But I just throw it out there and do it, because you know there's people out there that love to hear it, and I love to make music, and I love to be in King's X, and I love to write songs, and I love to do things with other people, you know. And if it makes people smile, it makes me happy, you know.
That's really cool. I wonder though, how much time today, Doug, do you spend actually playing the bass, playing the guitar?
I never play bass. I played Deftones all morning. The new album, I played the whole thing and then got into the one before that, and now I was over to one before that one. So I forgot the name of it, but and then I called you. But yeah, it's been a Deftones day. Because I love those guys because they have the same kind of approach that I'm familiar with. Is they like to go off the deep end and find new ways to twist things. And I was just listening to them, just being inspired. And but when I got up this morning, I put on Sly and the Family Stone live at Woodstock.
There.
And I was like, that was really, really good. Just taking care of stuff and doing some house cleaning and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've written 8 songs in the last 7 days. So I'm on a roll right now. I have to make myself stop because I'm not remembering what I've written, and I'm losing track. So I gotta slow down again. I got like I'm up about 30 songs now for a Doug record and a King's X, some tunes for King's X to put together and make it King's X songs. But when I don't practice at all. What I do is practice writing music. That's what I do. That's how I practice. It's I write a song, and I love writing songs. It's so much fun to make up a song and then sit and listen to it. You go, okay, you did that. That's pretty cool. It's like who's gonna hear it? I don't know. Nobody will, but you just sit and go, maybe when I die, somebody will go get up a whole archive of all my stuff and put it out, and people go, oh wow, cool, this is what he's been doing, but it's almost like autism. I just love to write. So when I pick up my bass or my guitar or acoustic guitar or anything that I have, I'll start playing, and the first thing comes to mind as soon as I come up with something, it's like, okay. Pull up the drum program because you don't let this go.
Right,
It's just
right.
to me, practice is a waste of time now for me. There's no need for it. I'm not going to get any better, and I can't improve myself. Not saying that, there's things that I can't do, and I really realize that I can't. I cannot play like Billy Sheehan. Okay, I
Yeah.
can't do it. I tried. I can't. I love him. He's a good friend. I can't play like that, so I stopped trying.
Yeah.
Jaco Pastorius, Stanley Clarke. I remember when I heard School Days. Dun, 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 dun. Can he play chords on his bass? And then he did the Larry Graham. Then he plucked the strings, and then he goes. And I'm going, okay, how do you do? And I sat there and for hours. And I just gave up after about an hour of it. I goes, fuck this. I said, I don't care. I don't care. And I decided I couldn't do it. So that's my point is like there's n nothing really new that I feel like I can come up with on bass or something to improve what I do. I'm just like a groove bass player who plays a little sloppy and behind the beat. And that's my trademark. I don't mind that. For me, it's all about writing songs,
Yeah. Well, that's the way it should be, for any musician, really, because that's where it's at. I'm horrible at it. Absolutely horrible at it. It's like, well, you talked about the Deftones a minute ago. I'm going to admit something to you that I've never admitted to anybody else
Oh
ever.
God, okay,
So
tell me.
the almost 2 million people that are going to see this, they're going to hear me say this. And that I am such a huge David Gilmour fan that I listen to David Gilmour live at Pompeii twice a day. Every day,
Wow.
twice a day.
You're deep.
I get lost in it. I mean, every little emotion, every little movement, I get lost in it.
I admire you.
Oh, don't. No,
I do. Cause I don't feel that way like I used to.
Yeah.
I remember when I first said thank you for being myself. Let Me Be Myself by Sly and the Family Stone. I bought the 45 and I played it on repeat all day.
Yeah.
I turned the stereo off, went to bed. I woke up the next day and put it on repeat. It
Yeah.
went on for 2 weeks until my cousin took the 45 and hid it from me. Okay,
Wow.
seriously, I know every grunt, groan, and moan in that song. And even if when I pull it out today to play it, I laugh at how intricate I learned that song. But now I've heard so much music, and everything I hear, I can trace it back to somewhere else.
Yeah.
So for me, it's not where you brought it from, is how you put it together in a song to make me, to surprise me.
Yeah.
And that, and so, and that's hard to do for me anymore. I'm kind of jaded. And I know there's bands out there that can do it. I know there's groups out there that are doing what everything that I've wanted to hear, but I've just gotten so jaded that it's just hard to find it anymore, or hard to stop and take that time and listen too. You know, before I could listen to Close to the Edge 20 minutes and forget about time. Now I can put that song on, and within a minute, I'm thinking about what I have to do next, and the internet and the whatever I got to do. You know what I'm saying? So everything has changed, and I'm trying to figure out a way to still love what I do and be productive within this network, or this what do you call it, matrix of what we live in now, because it's a crazy matrix of we're trapped, you know. I mean, I can't get away from my phone. My whole life is on this fucking phone, and
Yeah.
I can get and radiation is going into my hands and in my face. And am I going to put it down? No, because I need it. The food that we eat, same thing. You got to read everything on the label. You can barely buy anything without it's gonna kill you.
Yeah.
So there's so much we're dealing with that, and then and trying to be creative amongst all that. It's inspirational because there's so much to sing about. But the sad thing about it is everybody's singing about it.
Yeah.
And the, so basically it's like everybody's screaming, but nobody's listening. You know, and oh yeah, that's a great line of a song. It's already been said. You know, I've said it and somebody else has said it, you know. So this is where I'm at musically. I mean, I'm really, really looking for some inspiration, in a profound way for me personally,
Yeah.
and I don't this is morbid, but David Bowie wrote a song right before he died. I wrote a whole record right before he died about dying. I'm going, wow, it's like I'm 73. It's like, yeah, I'm writing songs about dying now. And it's like it's crazy that I don't know. It's just I just wake up every morning and pinch myself and go, you're still here and you're still doing what you do and you're still doing what you love and people are still listening to what you're doing. I'm done.
Yeah. Well, you got
Sorry, I'm babbling.
no, you're man, you're great. You've got I know just from my own, listenership and stuff like that. I'm in my friends. I don't have one friend, I don't think, that isn't a fan of what you and King's X does. I
Awesome.
mean, and I've heard the other thing too that and I can tell by this conversation with you, Doug. One of the things, because we've never met, one of the things that I've heard about you is just what a great guy you are. Everybody comes up, it's like he's so friendly, he's so nice, he was such a great guy. I actually manage a few bands, and one of the bands that I manage has opened for you guys on occasion, and that they're called Colossal Street Jam. They're in New Jersey.
Okay, cool.
And that, and all they do is talk about how great you guys are, how nice you guys are. And you want to know something? I think that that's one of the biggest assets any musician or band could have, is to have their fans say, man, they're just such genuine, down to earth, great, nice people. You know what I mean? Because there's so many assholes in this business, right?
Yeah.
Hats off to you, man.
Well, thanks. I look at it. How do I say this? Most of us walk through this world feeling like you're not special, you're not noticed, no one cares. You know, even if you've had a great life, you even had a great parents, you know, you have that feeling of you don't belong or you don't fit in. You know, it's just something natural to us. And you know, I've felt that way, and people have made me feel that way. So, you know, I think I really want people to know that they matter. And it's not something that I started on purpose. I remember my whole life, I've always been liked. People just like me. And I always say, "Why you like me?" And they go, "Because you're nice." And I'm going, "Well, I'm just me, you know. I'm not trying to be nice, you know. I'm just like," and they go, "Well, that's what we like, you know." And through the years, I tried to figure out what is it, you know, because I didn't like me, you know. I always thought my niceness was a weakness, or my niceness made me look like an idiot, you know, or pathetic, you know. But something in the back of my head said, just be yourself, you know. That's all you can do at this point in your life, because everything else you've tried failed, you know. It's like you can only be you. And if they don't like you, they don't like you. And it doesn't matter, because it never did matter. You know, it's like what matters is every day how you live your life and how much positive energy that you're giving out and how much you're receiving. You know, even that I've had to learn, that negative energy coming at you all the time isn't good for you. You know, it's not good for your psyche. God, there's just so much that I've been learning through music and the sonicness of it. But when you were, I mean, I really got off track here, but you're just talking about being a nice guy. It's sort of like I just love people. You know, I always have. I'm just a sucker for people. I mean, it's like all you gotta do is cry and I'll do whatever you want. You know, you just look me in the eyes and go, "I love you. I'll give you a big hug." You know, I'm just a sucker for that. I always have been. I'm a big wimp. Dude, I've been on a binge the last few days, because I just need to take a break from writing and doing what I do around the house. And so I watched like a few American Idol, those little sections where they just show like 20 singers, the most emotional ones or something, you know. And oh my God, the tissue paper, I'm sitting there crying like a baby, and all these, you know. And it's just been so much fun to cry and to be emotional and not be ashamed of it and watch people sing. And what I love about it is these people start singing and I start crying, and then I remember, you know, you that's what you do to people. And I smile and go, "Yeah." And then I keep crying to these people, you know, watching them cry and or sing. And I just feel like it, for the last few years of my life, I feel like I finally found my stride into what I do and who I am. And now I can just enjoy it and not try to second guess it and not worry about what somebody thinks, because I got nothing to prove anymore. So, you know, it's just nice to sit there and cry when somebody sings and blow my nose and go, "You know, I remember when I made that lady cry when I was 3 years old, you know." And I go, "Yeah, you did that too, didn't you?" "Yeah." And I'm thinking, wow, if it was American Idol right now and I was like 19 years old, I'd march my ass up there right now and sing my ass off, you know. And I would probably would not have won. And I know for a fact that if I had one, I would have left before it was over, or before they started working with me, because they would start to control me and I couldn't be controlled. I joined a band, a group when I was 20 years old, and they were called the Spurlows. And it was a show group, and they danced and sang, and they had this whole choreography and everything. And I joined them, and I was a part of this show group. And after 6 months, I quit, because I couldn't take the control. We had to do exactly what they did, and I didn't want to do it. I wanted to do my thing, you know. And that's when I realized that, you know, I got to do what I do. You know, that's just the way it is, and do or die, you know. Wow, where did I get around to that?
I don't know, but it's cool.
Whoa!
But it's cool, Doug. It really is cool. And so what, before I let you go, what's on the horizon in the near future for you outside of work?
Well, for King's X, we're just gonna keep playing music. It's pretty cool right now. We're doing well. People coming to see us, selling out places. Ty and Jerry are playing better than ever. I love playing with these guys. It's sort of like after those couple of years of not playing together in the pandemic and all that stuff, just being around my guys again. I hate them as much as I love them. Everything is there. What makes us who we are, and so I'm looking forward to doing more gigs. And it's made me happy actually to be. We're doing a certain amount of gigs a month. Financially, I can pay my bills, and I can come home and still tend my garden and clean my house. So it's almost like retiring, but not. I like it. And people ask me how you doing. I go, slap me if I complain, because I have nothing to complain about really. Compared to, I don't know anybody who's 73 that's in shape and doing the best they can like I am. So I'm lucky, and I feel like I'm blessed in that area. I'm gonna make a new solo record. Still talking to the guys in KXM, George Lynch and Ray Luzier, about making a new record. We'll get around to it sooner or later, and maybe another Grinder Blues record, my blues band. That we got two records out. You guys got to check them out. It's a lot of fun. Jerry, I hear, might be doing a new record. I don't know if I'm spilling the beans yet, but I heard through the grapevine, and I'm sure Ty's working on something new. And everybody's writing, and so we're just kind of pinching ourselves, thinking, we're still doing this. And we still got a life, we're still healthy. And yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool, man. I tell you what, I appreciate your time, Doug. I really do. It was a pleasure talking to you. You're
You're welcome.
a cool dude, and
Yeah.
I gotta ask a question though, real quick. Is the apartment next door or the house next door, is it for rent? Because you'd make an awesome neighbor.
Well, the people next door are actually really, really, really cool. And they're not musicians, but they did check what I do out when I moved in here. And they're really cool. They love music, and they don't care if I make music here. This is California anyway, so you can make all the noise you want. I
Right.
mean, what I love about California, you can make noise here because everybody's a musician.
Right.
And the people on the other side have chickens, actually, and they wake me up every morning. And this is in Lake Balboa too, in the
Oh,
valley.
wow.
So it's like, yeah, it's
Wow.
I love California. I don't care what anybody says. This is a cool place. If you're a musician, if you're an artist, if you're weird, if you just want to be around people that encourage you to be yourself, this is a great place to live. And yeah, it's expensive, but I find that when you learn to live in your means, you kind of do better than you did when you didn't,
Yeah.
and that's what I've been finding. So, I don't know. I shouldn't have said that. I mean, what I'm saying is, been watching all these things about people dogging California.
Yeah.
California's great. Homeless, same thing. Homeless ain't no worse here than it is anywhere else.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
I used to have a home in Laguna Beach. Yeah. I actually used to work in
Mm.
television, so I used to go out there all the time, and it got to the point to where I was out there 2, 3 weeks at a time, and eventually I bought a home. And so when I travel out there, I love Southern California. I mean, I love California, period. I got a lot of great friends out there, but
Southern California, man. I love it too.
yeah, I love it. Well, Doug, I want to thank you so much again, buddy, and
You're welcome.
I wish you and your band all the best in the world. And until next time.
All right, we'll do it again.
All right, man, you take care.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Doug Pinnick from King's X. I want to thank Doug so much for participating in this episode. Do yourself a favor. Make sure that you're following the band. Make sure you're supporting them when they're out on tour, and make sure you're buying their music All artists need that support today more than ever. And again, thank you to Doug for participating. Now, next Wednesday, as we start to wind down, right? We start to wind down season four. We're getting ready to go into season five, which is going to be huge. It's going to be bigger than this year. Each year is just like a stair step, you know, to all kinds of really coolness. And so next week we sit down with Soren Anderson, the guitarist for Glenn Hughes and Glenn Hughes himself. So next Wednesday, it's Soren Anderson, the guitarist for Glenn Hughes, and the man himself, Glenn Hughes, is going to be joining us right here on Guitar Talk. It is going to be a great episode. You're not going to want to miss it. Now, do yourself a favor. Make sure that you're following Guitar Talk on social media. We've got a TikTok page and a Facebook page, and a YouTube. Please do yourself a favor and subscribe to it. Follow us, like it, share it. You know, if you got guitar friend buddies, let them know about it. If you know people that build and, you know, create really cool gear, let them know about it, because, you know, we're here for that purpose, to spread the joy and the love of guitar around the world with some of the greatest people that there are in that world. So until next time, I'm Jimmy Warren. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see you next week with my guests, Soren Anderson and Glenn Hughes. Yeah.